committee. I cannot formally open up because the House is still on the floor where we're trying to get SIG taxes to pay for some of our services, so I know you will understand that piece. Senator Gordy and I are very much invested in hearing those of you who have come today, so we want to open up so we'll give you time. By the way, for those of you who are standing, and this is an overflow room, did we select the level, Ms. Baker?
I think it's right next door.
We're going to double check to see if the room next door is available as an overflow room, so you can have that. Otherwise, the fire department is going to come and ask us out. Ms. Baker, when you have, we're going to have to limit you to 2 minutes apiece because I know all of you want to be respecting of all of those who came to be heard. And so at a minute and 30 seconds, you'll see Ms. Baker sitting next to me on my left raise this up. I mean, you have 30 seconds left. And I know I don't want you to consider me rude, but I will stop you so that you won't be on somebody else's time. Is that okay? So what we're going to do is she'll raise this at at 30 seconds left, and then that means you have 30 more seconds to go and end your conversation today. But you know what? Speak from your hearts and say, this is what I came here today. I want whatever it is that you want, and I want you to make sure that you support us on that issue. And that's from your heart, and then you just get on, because we know statistics. We know data and that kind of stuff on this issue. The overflow room is room C, which is... It's about two rooms over, but it's three rooms over. Three rooms over is room C for those who want a place to sit. Thank you very much. So with that, what we will do is to begin our time, and I will be very respecting of those people who came 100 miles and further. So I'd like to call Mr. McCutcheon and Kamara Davis and Kim Carver. Bruce McCutcheon, Carlotta Davidson, Kim Carver. If you have written testimony, you can leave it right over here, and our staff person over here will pick that up. Thank you. Okay, can I get you to move a little faster so we can get to talking here? Because I really am interested in hearing everybody.
First, ladies first.
And thank all of you for coming, too. Thank you.
Okay. My name is Kimya Carrera. I've been a nursing assistant for almost 20 years. I'm one of the people who is there working with and taking care of your mother, father, sister, brother, or any one of your family members that might need some type of care after surgery. When I say care, I mean all the way around care, such as activities of daily living. Helping patients get up and down from bed, toileting, brushing teeth, combing hair, getting dressed, taking showers and baths, all the things that we do every day. Not only the physical needs I help with, but as CNAs, we help people cope with problems that arise while recovering. Dealing with pain, problems with family members, confusion on what's going on with them, all the time helping them become independent again. There's so much involved that basically I become more of a family member than a care provider. The number one issue that I and others that I've talked to are most concerned about is staffing. The ratios between staff and patients have not changed in over 20 years, with the acuity of patients going up and the number of patients coming in with such a high level of care, it's extremely important that the number of patients and staff change. As it stands, roughly it takes about 32 minutes on day shift, 28 minutes on evening shift, and 23 minutes on nights for each patient to be properly taken care of. I take care of 15 patients on a regular basis. If I'm helping one patient with a pelvic fracture get ready for the night, at the same time, three other patients are waiting to either go to the bathroom or need to let me know if they need pain medication or they may be in serious trouble. As it stands, if I'm off the floor and we're short of staff members. I have no one else to back me up because other staff members are busy with their patients, and this is when the serious injuries occur. So keep this thought in your mind, and if she comes up, and please support the governor's budget for safe staffing.
Thank you. So when you, so that you won't take anybody else's time, do this as support for him, and then we can keep going faster, okay?
Okay, my name is Corona Davison, and I'm going to talk about my job as a CNA. As a CNA, I meet the needs of our residents, young and old, to assist them with their daily living activities. I feel that these are broken down into physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. Physical meaning getting them dressed, combing their hair when needed, washing their hands and face when needed, getting them up and putting them in their wheelchairs, which sometimes require two people, and other times it requires a mechanical lift. We feed them three meals a day plus snacks, changing incontinent tents, keeping them clean and dry as possible. That includes any incontinent accidents that happen in between changing, small and large. I take care of catheters, colostomy bags. My job is to give peri care to every one of my residents during my shift, which means making sure all personal body parts don't have odor. Repositioning residents or turning them every 2 hours to prevent bed sores. Assisting nurses with any treatments that are needed to be done, oral care, showering the residents twice a week, shaving men and women if needed, making sure that they have their hearing aids, glasses, braces, or splints on whenever they need to be worn, making sure they're ready for doctor's appointments, outings, putting them in the car and getting them out, monitoring their pain, reporting all changes to the charge nurse, taking blood pressures, getting them to their physical therapy, and if there's a TV show, letting them watch it. All of this mentally and emotionally, there's also needs spiritually to me, respecting their beliefs, the way they were raised, their morals, no matter how different they are from my own, to put a smile on someone's face whenever possible, to be compassionate, to listen to someone's tears no matter how heartbreaking. Holding their hands, the road to recovery and death seems so long but comes so quickly. This is all part of my job. The ratio in the state of Oregon of 10 to 1 on days, 15 to 1 on evenings, and 25 on graveyard, as we as care providers are not giving the quality of care these people deserve and the quality of life they've come to know. We have falls from residents trying to take themselves to the bathroom, oral care not being done, no time for showers, hair sometimes not combed, face and hands not washed, residents being...
Ms. Davison, your time is up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Bruce McCutcheon. I'm a restorative aide. That means I help my residents with the range of motion, exercise, ambulation programs, whirlpools, and anything that will help them contribute to their usual daily activities of daily living. If you take care of your mother, you're considered a saint. If you take care of a complete stranger's mother, you are overworked, understaffed, and made to work for minimum wage. When you're short-staffed, when 86% of all of our nursing homes across the United States operate short-staffed on a regular basis. When you're short-staffed, the first thing to go is the restorative program. No range of motion exercises leading to contractures. Next, snacks and juices, drinks are missed, leading to undernourished and underhydrated residents. Then showers, and they don't get changed as often as you'd like them to, and they get to sit there in their wetness and their despair. This leads to skin breakdown or pressure ulcers. Not because I don't want to do my job. Not because I don't like to do my job. I have worked on shifts at one and two people with one and two people short. I've seen others give up their breaks and their lunches just to make sure they get basic care, let alone get their nails cleaned or maybe a little lotion on their feet. It's so obvious the level of quality care is directly related to the staffing, and there just isn't enough of either to go around. Now we hear about the baby boomers going to contribute to more residents to our long-term care roles. And we hear of veterans' hospitals that may close. Who's going to take care of these people? We have a shortage of CNAs now, and we have to get ahead of this curve that's coming. I ask you to completely fund the staffing changes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Joyce Willman, Eric McTarnish, McIntosh, and Mr. Volpe. You know what? Ms. Willman and Ms. McIntosh, would you mind if we just hear from Mr. Volpe and the people that brought him from McCandy? Pam and Jill Vandeveer. But stay ready. I apologize.
Should I
have
been put on an error?
Oh, okay.
Should I go ahead and start?
Well, I think so.
Okay. My name is Mike Volpe, and I'm here to talk about two points. One is the quality of the Oregon Health, of the Oregon long-term health care program has been largely due to the variety of programs that have been offered. The number of them, as you are well aware, have been cut. General assistance program and medical need program, those were both cut 4 years ago. OPI and the top three levels for the service priority levels have been cut out. The quality of care, of long-term care in Oregon, is being cut. I'd also like to comment on the equity issue, which you're probably also aware of. I'm very cognizant of the inability of the local staff to try to do the things that they used to do, because there just aren't as many of them. And I know they're working very hard. When I go in the office and personally speak to one of them, it's very easy for me to see the stress level is quite high. So I ask you to fully fund the transfer AAAs to the level that they have requested. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Now, Ms. Roman and Erin McIntosh.
Chair Carter, members of the committee. My name is Erin McIntosh. I just turned 26. I've been a home care worker for 7 years. I started taking care of my mom, who has multiple sclerosis, while I was still in college earning a degree in paralegal studies. She completely depends on others for everything that goes into the functions of daily living. I've had to become an expert in communicating with doctors, medical providers in the health field, and then making sure that everybody knows what's going on to coordinate her care. Without the home care program, my mom would be in a nursing home where her family and friends wouldn't be able to visit with her as easily as they can in her home, and in some cases, not at all. In my opinion, if she went into a nursing home, she would lose her will to live. Every day of the fight for her and being with the people she loves makes that fight worth raging. The work is very exhausting. My mom weighs about 125 pounds, and I have to physically lift her 3 to 4 times a day, and that's just the tip of the iceberg of the physical demands. It's emotionally draining as well. Seeing someone you care about depending on you for everything and just trying to do the best you can to make her life a little easier. With the union, I've been able to earn a living wage. I've been able to buy my own home. The health insurance has been amazing and helps ensure that I can take care of myself so I can continue taking care of my mom. It's a lonely job, but I now know that other home care workers can network and feel more supported by co-workers. I still have difficulty finding rest workers when I need to take time off, though. We've worked hard to maintain costs and provide services in the most efficient way possible. We've been sensitive to the overall cost of the home care program and bargaining, and each of the two previous contract cycles, we've always come in much lower than it was budgeted. The money we need to settle our contract will be with our modest pay raise and continuation of our health care is already there in the savings on workers' compensation costs that was done in the April issue. We care for those who have made their contributions, our grandparents, our parents, people who have served our country. We need to honor our past as much as we invest in our future, and we look to you for that leadership. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Joy Wellman. Thank you for giving me a chance to speak. I've been a home care worker for 13 years. I take care of seniors and people with disabilities in their own home who want to remain in their own homes. These people deserve to be treated with respect and not just cast aside as the state budget gets tight. Home care workers always understood this, and we are dedicated to the work to preserve the services our consumer employers depend upon. The training that is now available to home care workers was originally won in a previous contract agreement, and has helped us to help our consumers with even more compassion and skill, which in turn has kept our health insurance and workers' prices down to a lot less than originally anticipated. Healthcare workers honor consumer employers' rights and understand that they are our employers and they have a choice on how their care is given. They have a right to quality services to maintain a healthy environment and well-being. These rights are now being threatened. Over the years, our consumer employers have seen their services reduced and some have even been moved to a lower cost plan, not of their choice at all. Budget cutbacks would take the home care program the wrong direction, and proposals the state is making at the bargaining table would take us back to the dark ages. The state proposals are to freeze wages or drop some to lessen what we are paid before our first contract by creating a category of care for hourly workers that is only $4.05 an hour, a violation of Oregon's minimum wage laws. They would also tie the hands of 24-hour care providers so they can't take less than 24 hours off at a time. So if someone needed to take an hour off to visit their doctor, they'd have to arrange with their consumer employer to take a full 24-hour period off. The state also proposes to lower 24-hour respite workers' pay to $4.53 an hour, a level that's completely unacceptable and make it impossible to get respite work. We understand that everyone wants something, and it's a hard decision that you'll have to make. But please keep in mind that as our own parents need more help, we baby boomers age, veterans come home from this war, and drunk drivers mutilate people in wrecked cars. These people will all need help, and we home care workers are frontline of giving them the best possible care to stay in their own communities, go into their own churches, and staying a vital human being for as long as possible, living and dying in their own homes.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Jim Coulson, Barry Dunningfeld, Mary Shortall.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, won't waste any time due to our time constraints. For the record, Jim Carlson, representing the Oregon Healthcare Association. I just want to start by first off thanking all the CNAs and all the home care workers and caregivers in the crowd today for all the hard work you do every day. And also want to acknowledge all the hard work the agency and their staff do every day around the clock to make sure this vulnerable population gets services they need. We've passed out some stuff that outlines a number of our key budget priorities in this budget and points out a number of the issues where we think the co-chair's budget is actually inadequate. I'm not going to dwell on those specifically unless there are specific questions, but due to the limits on time, I did want to address head-on an issue that came up yesterday in committee about some of the strain we've got in the middle of our system on the home and community-based care substitute home program. And you heard an excellent presentation yesterday about limits on Medicaid access and problems you're seeing there. Some of that's related to rates. Some of that's related to the acuity. They mentioned when we eliminated service priority levels, what we're left with in the system now is people with much higher care needs are all that are left. One thing else I wanted to point out, though, for the last 6 years, we've seen tremendous proposed budget decreases and rate cuts proposed for those providers. And outside of this building, folks don't understand sometimes that's all politics. And during that six-year period when folks were threatened with huge rate cuts, they told themselves and the families and residents that they served, you know, if I can reduce my reliance on Medicaid, I'm going to do it because this is not a stable source of funding. And so you're seeing a lot of pushback now, and that's what's happening out at that community level as a result of a lot of those proposals. People are pulling back. You do have significant differentials between Medicaid rates and private rates. In closing, due to the fact I've already gotten the yellow comment, and I'd like to talk about a lot of this in more depth, but don't have the opportunity, I did want to just flag a couple issues in particular. Besides the AAA equity and OPI funding, which you're going to hear about, the Nursing Facility Staffing Commission Task Force report and recommendations are only half funded in the co-chair's budget, and then on the reauthorization of the provider tax is not fully funded, even though the revenues are assumed in the co-chair's budget. Thank you.
Madam Chair, quick question.
Yes.
Mr. Carlson, are you going to go down and testify on 2530, the revenue bill?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, we are strongly in support and on the record of new revenue sources this session, both in terms of on the sin taxes that have been proposed, the provider taxes, broad-based tax reform.
Are you going to go down and testify on 2530?
I don't have testimony prepared right now, but I am in support on broad-based tax reform, and we are officially in support also on the corporate minimum.
Please walk down the hall and let them know that in hearing
okay.
room A. Please.
Thank you,
that
Senator.
Hearing is going on right now.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Carter, members of the committee, I'll be as brief as I can be. Ditto on the thanks that Mr. Carlson gave. I won't repeat that. I'm Barry Donenfeld, for the record. I'm the president of O4AD, the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities. You've heard much testimony over the past few days about our renowned long-term care system. I think it's fair to say that that system is perilously close to being broken. It's becoming destabilized, and we have disinvested in it over the last number of years. I'll talk about four issues: workload, equity, Oregon Project Independence, and preparing for the future. The workload on our field staff is staggering. There are numerous unfunded mandates. They don't have the time to do their jobs. And data from the Department of Human Services shows that if you base the staffing in the system on workload instead of caseload, we are 234 FTE understaffed. Equity has increased by 62%. The gap between the state and the area agencies on aging since the governor's recommended budget was released. We beseech you for relief on this. If you combine understaffing with underfunding, it's a double whammy to the transfer AAAs that serve 70% of the long-term care caseload, and there's not much more we can do to keep this from breaking down. Oregon Project Independence needs stable funding. We appreciate the commitment that's been made from the property tax deferral, but we would respectfully disagree that that's a stable source of funding. Oregon Project Independence needs a $12 million general fund base and an expansion of the program for younger people with disabilities through the property tax. Preparing for the future. The future's known. SPD shared much data with you about the population changes that are coming. We need investments now and in the next 10 years to prepare for that future. Instead, what we're getting is disinvestments and destabilization. Thank you.
Mr. Donenfeld, how long have you been at 4A?
I've been an area agency on aging director in Oregon for 17 years, and I've been president of O4AD on several different occasions, this time for the last 3.5 years.
Did you know that the suggestion that I took the last time for funding from the deferral program came from the 4A?
I know that our lobbyist was heavily involved in those discussions, but having spoken to her since, her recollection is that the property tax deferral funds were intended to supplement any general fund allocation.
Right. Thank you very much.
Hello. My name is Mary Shortall. I'm the Director for Aging and Disability Services in Oklahoma County, and I wanted to speak on Oregon Project Independence as well as the equity issue. I have prepared testimony that I'll hand in, but I wanted to point out about Oregon. The need for Oregon Project Independence is growing. It's become the safety net for so many people. As you all know, in 2003, when legislative cuts were made for Medicaid levels 14 and 17, as well as Oregon Project Independence at that time was cut in half and still has not been restored to the 2003 level. We now have people who are still in need. They haven't gone away. We see them every day. And Oregon Project Independence is what we're relying upon for many of those people. For younger people with disabilities, there's just as much of a need since the Medicaid long-term care cuts. And so we, so I'm proposing also that that you fund Oregon Project Independence from the general fund and use the tax deferral fund for the expansion. For the equity issue, I wanted to say a little bit about that for Multnomah County. We prepare a budget based on the governor's recommended budget, and the timing is such that we don't know what the co-chair's budget is yet. So for us, what is going to happen is that we'll be laying off 15 employees again this July 1st. And this is after having very, very high workloads already because of being at 80 cents on the dollar for equity. So I'll hand in my testimony, but very much urge you to support the request that DHS made for funding.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
I want to urge, I want to borrow your word, we have got to connect what is going on in Hearing Room F with what is going on right now down in Hearing Room A, which is the discussion about revenue reform and the opportunity to capture new revenue so that we can pay for these services that Oregonians need and deserve. So to everyone within the sound of my voice, whether you are in this room or the overflow room, as you complete your testimony here, or if you're not going to get a chance to testify in this setting, please go down to Hearing Room A and make your presence felt, and let the chair of the committee, Representative Barnhart, and others know that there is a presence here that supports the need and that supports revenue reform. Please, we've got to make the connection between what between these two things today.
Madam Chair. Well, I get a little bit frustrated when I hear new revenue and revenue reform without the words additional, because we can have new revenue, yeah, if we get rid of some of the old revenue. We can have reform if we move the chairs around. I'm talking about additional revenue.
And that's what the conversation is
about.
Very
good, but I don't hear that. I hear, you know, everybody wants revenue reform. When it comes to additional revenue, that's a different story. So make sure that we have the money to cover all of the things and not just moving the decks and chairs on the Titanic because we're all headed down.
And I want to be explicit. It is about capturing new revenue, adequate and sufficient revenue to pay for the services that Oregonians need and deserve. Please take advantage of this.
Charles Kirsch, Bob Lawrence, Ryan Hack. I'm only just trying to move you fast. That's all. And Senator Gordon is exactly right. Unless we can get revenue reform so that we can have additional dollars to be able to pay for the services that are being requested, it's not going to happen. So let's go down and talk. Charles Kirch.
Yes.
Bob Lawrence.
Bob Lawrence won't be testifying.
Brian Hack.
Brian Hesch.
Brian Hesch. Thank you. Dennis.
This is a good call.
Okay. We're just looking at you. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Carter and members of the subcommittee. My name is Charles Kurtz. I live in Portland, and I'm a volunteer member of the Governor's Commission on Senior Services and speaking on behalf of the Commission this afternoon. The Governor's Commission is charged by statute to advise the Governor, the Department of Human Services, and the Legislative Assembly about how best to meet needs of seniors, and so we're discharging our responsibility this afternoon. I'm sure that you heard in earlier testimony by senior and people with disabilities staff about forums that the Governor's Commission held throughout the state this past year to talk to seniors and service providers and community leaders about the needs of seniors and the problems that we're going to be facing with the a massive increase in seniors over the next few years. We met with over 500 people in 20 communities throughout the state, and we heard loud and clear from those folks that their communities, that the state system isn't prepared for the future, and that individuals aren't really preparing for their own long-term care needs. We took that information and created a report called Riding the Wave, sort of a metaphor based on the what some people are calling the tidal wave, the tsunami of increase in the senior population, and I've included copies of that with the testimony today. But the main conclusion that we drew in our report is this. We need to begin planning now for the future of Oregon's seniors. Of all of the things that we debate in this building, one thing is for certain is that the number of seniors is going to double in the state in the next 20 years, and we're not ready for it. So our testimony today is really forward-reaching. We, at the beginning of this session, we were really pleased that for the first time in three biennia, the governor presented a budget that had no cuts in direct services for seniors. But unfortunately, as we've communicated to the governor, the budget still does not address the needs for planning and investing in the future.
Thank you very much. Your time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Mr. Hesch.
Good afternoon. My name is Brian Hesch. You asked for us to speak from the heart, so I'm just going to do that. On April 11, 2004, shortly after my 26th birthday, I had just moved into a beautiful apartment downtown, had just gotten all my stuff in, and was walking downtown to get a pair of sneakers. That was my last memory until 10 days later. I woke up and found my parents in from Iowa and other friends and family around me. They told me that I'd been out for 10 days and that I'd gone through 9 major surgeries. I had a broken neck. I lost my right leg. And broke just about everything else a person can break. I'm still here for whatever reason, but the long and the short of it is I didn't have, and my parents didn't have, adequate funds to support me. They lived in Iowa on a pastor's salary, and where they lived had no way of providing for someone in a wheelchair. Luckily, because of the MPI program, Multnomah Project Independence, which is age-neutral, I was able to go from my hospital bed into a foster home and was able to get healthy rather than going from my hospital bed into a nursing home. Now we're talking $500 cost rather than $5,000 or $5,200 a month cost. Today my plan is to go to law school, and let me be an example. There are many, many more like me. And I would ask that you make OPI age neutral and fund it properly. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. There's a group here with Representative Cowan. She's still trying to get off the floor of the House, and she wants you to wait until she can get here. So we'll be calling you later. Willie Pugh, Ruth McEwen. Lucille Pugh. Excuse me. Ruth McEwen. Michael Egan.
And somebody move that chair.
Are the Vanderbeers prepared to? Do you want to speak today? Okay, you just your tears being supported. Oh, nice. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, members of the subcommittee. I, with you, share the bravery of the young man that we just heard from, and he is an example of the people who come to the agency and for whom the state has some responsibility in seeing that they are able to live a full and independent life. And I'm proud to say that Oregon's long-term care system is able to do that. And part of the enabling legislation, which was passed years ago, speaks to choice, independence, and dignity. And through the work of the agency and the legislature, the executive department, and all the others, we have been able to design and fund a program that brings reality to that dream. However, there are problems. Primarily funding, and I'm going to speak primarily to OPI. For one thing, the last session of the legislature provided the authority and the ability to help people with disabilities, but that is an unfunded mandate, and we would appreciate not only having that funding from 2032 available, but it is uncertain. We do need general funds to carry out the intent of that program, both for seniors and people with disabilities. We would be glad to provide additional data to you with reference to our recommendations, but we thank you, and we share in your spirit of independence and care for those who need.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Carter and the subcommittee. My name is Michael Egan, speaking today on behalf of Elders in Action, the Multnomah County Commission, which represents over 95,000 seniors 60 and above. And you asked me to speak what was on my heart today. Bottom line is, we fear that for obvious well-known statistics that the tax deferral fund is not sufficient, does not have a sufficient revenue stream to support a program such as OPI, even if that were the only purpose for it. We urge you as strongly as we can to restore OPI to the general fund, where it's been for its entire 32 years of its existence. Looking at it another way, if the general fund is good enough for the schools, if it's good enough for the highway patrol, it's good enough for OPI. Please restore it where it belongs so that it can maintain the stability. Because while I'm not the most severe example, I am a client, or as we say these days, a consumer of OPI. And if it weren't for OPI, my unpaid caregiver wife and I would be in one heap of hurt. And as soon as I was able to spend down, I would be under Medicaid at much greater expense. And Senator Moore said, I'll make a personal pledge to you, even though, and I realize this is for county purposes primarily, even though I just had the dubious pleasure of paying $1,000 income tax at the end of the year, not to mention my federal income tax, I pledge to you, if necessary, I would add another $200 to that for the necessary human service program. And if I have enough time, I will go down to roommate and add my two bits to the pile. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I want to thank you for coming all the way to Eugene. You've just been traveling.
Yep, I get around. this is for...
Thank you.
Shelly
Imo?
Ralph Warner, Mary Johnson. Oh, okay. Mary, you can wait and come with your group. I apologize. Yes. So Shelley Alma and Ralph Warner. Shelley Imo, Ralph Brenner. Okay. So Ms. Johnson, to answer your question, you're with another group and they wanted you guys to stay together, so I'll wait.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and the committee. My name is Shelley Immel, and I am Vice President of ASME Local 88 in Multnomah County. We represent about 2,800 employees in the county, and I'm in the Department of Human Services, County Human Services, and over the last 7 years we have taken a battery every year. Every year we've had layoffs, and it's obviously traumatizing to our employees, but they are in this business because they want to help out people who are elderly and disabled, and it is a horrible thing when you can only approve a third of all the people who come before you because there's no money to approve them for benefits. The other thing I'd like to say is I'm here particularly for the equity issue because in Multnomah County, based on the property limitation, tax limitation issues, we're going to have to face a $15 million cut this year, and then we'll have another $10 million cut next year. The equity will add another $3.6 million that we would have to take, and it will have to come out of aging services, aging disability services. So we are already facing cuts up front just because of the way the tax limitation was set us up in when it was passed. I also want to say that we are not a just me union. We are very concerned about how the equity issue faces a number of counties. At least 10 counties are going to be faced with huge cuts. And in closing, I would like to say that the workers that we represent in Local 88 are committed to offering the best they can for the clients we serve. But we need to be treated fairly when it comes to funding decisions that the state makes. And there's no upside to the co-chair's budget related to the equity for the seniors and disabled people in our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Ralph Groner, representing American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, and of the five AAAs hurt, three are ours, or 7 million of the approximately 9 million reduction is an ASME loss, and that's approximately 30 positions. I would say we've come full circle. In 1975, my dear friend Bill McCoy and I co-chaired the Committee on Aging. We hired a young kid out of law school named Ron Wyden, and we went around the state doing what you've been doing, and we created a program called Project Independence. We lobbied it through the legislature, and I then went to work when I came out of U of O as a War on Poverty community organizer, and my boss was Senator Winters, and I came up as a community organizer organizing the elderly. So as a kid in my 20s, I was named a co-chair of the Aging Committee, which was a federal grant. I'll make short of it. I will say that the equity issue not only hurts us, but really it hurts our clients, who are people, real people with everyday needs, and they have seen their services and programs reduced significantly, and I hate to see that occur even further. And add additionally, if you look at the effectiveness of OPI Project Independence at $135 a month versus approximately $650 general fund on Medicaid, not counting acute health care costs, I would say we've had a bargain and it's been a wonderful program. Bottom line, yes, I have been down the hall, and I have 30 seconds to say this. I was kicked out of the Revenue Committee in 1991 by Jim Witte because I wrote a speech called Down the Hall.
And I have never changed because I've been fighting the tax break, supporting beer tax, supporting cigarette tax, supporting minimum corporate tax, and revising the tax system. This union has been statewide an upfront leader in changing the tax structure. But when you speak openly, as I did in 91, I was made a laughing stock of that committee. Thank you for standing by what I stood for in 91 and will continue to do so. Thank you.
I appreciate you saying that very much, Mr. Broner, and I would just add to your message. This is a little known fact about our Oregon Constitution. Under Article 9, which is the chapter on finance, Sections 2 and 6, Oregon Constitution, it says the Legislative Assembly is required to raise revenue to meet the expenses of the state. That's when revenue is insufficient to meet the needs of government. And the Constitution also says, explicitly, the language is there. It says the legislature shall levy a tax. That's our job. Hold us accountable for doing our job in this session. I know you'll make that trip
make
back
sure
down
I'm
the hall.
I know you will.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair. Mary Johnson, Ed Necker, Diane Birch.
Senator Gordon.
I see Senator Withers. I just have to make a comment because you need to know that I was a teenager when I supervised him. How are you?
It's no problem.
All right.
Now, I'm sorry. Am I first?
Yes. You are.
Well, then.
Unless you want me to go first.
No, I'll go first, but I will have to.
You want to introduce yourself?
I am Edward Necker, Honorable Chair. Some members of the committee, subcommittee.
You're right.
I can't speak. I can't speak as fast as everyone else has been up here, but I definitely can't speak as eloquently. But the two issues that I want to address are also OBI and equity. Now I have. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Last session. There was an OPI, Senator Morissette introduced it, an OPI modernization bill, and it was to include the disabled. It came with a funding mechanism, which is something we like about bills, and the property tax deferral. But that was for the expansion. The general fund is responsible for the senior part of it. Or it's responsible for the whole thing, but the property tax deferral money is responsible for the expansion. In Lane County alone, there's a waiting list of 18 people right now. Mm-hmm. Recently, we were talking to a nurse who referred three people to OBI. Not severely disabled, you know. They were in their own home. Because of the waiting list on OPI, they had to sign up for Medicaid. Now, this is a difference between a couple $100 a month and a couple $1,000 a month. It's kind of, you'll excuse me of my language, but it's kind of a no-brainer. The second issue I want to address is equity, and I'll do it quickly, well, as quick as I can. In Lane County, the state pays its DHS employees 100%, it's reimbursed 100% for the cost. In Lane County, Senior Disabled Services is reimbursed for 85% of the cost. The co-chair's budget would cut that by half. Need I say more? It's It's not right. Thank you very much. And are there any questions?
No, thank you. I'm Mary Johnson. I live in Eugene. I'm a member of the Senior and Disabled Services Advisory Board in Lane County, and I'm here to support equal funding for human services throughout Oregon. I'm in support of restored funding for Oregon Project Independence, a program which is presently closed in Lane County for lack of funds, and which will be even more inadequate unless it receives funds from the general fund, as well as through property tax deferral. Ed is completely right in what he had to say. As to the equity issue, the Ways and Means budget calls for funding human services at 51% instead of the 95% required by statute. I don't understand, living in Lane County, why our county is underserved. I just simply don't understand it. Oregon Project Independence brings many benefits to Oregon. It serves humanitarian purposes, it saves Medicaid costs as it helps seniors stay in their homes and out of institutions, and it provides entry-level employment for a population that needs it. OPI provides funds, jobs in rural areas which may have limited opportunities for work. Caregiver jobs allow mothers to have some control over their work schedules and care for their children. As a program supporting economic incentives, OPI is a proven winner. It saves Medicaid costs for taxpayers, and it helps people help themselves through finding meaningful and necessary work in their communities. In many ways, OPI funding is a women's issue, since the people served are often women in our age of longevity, and caregivers are very often women helping out their families through a second job or through a period of unemployment. I tried to say this in Eugene. I couldn't get into the hearing room. I sent an email, and it's reproduced here. I want to say one last thing fast. I'd like to speak as well about your budget process this year, and here I'm speaking strictly for myself, not for Senior and Disabled Services or for LCOG and Eugene. Ways and Means has taken what I think of as a zero-based approach, meaning every program has got to justify itself. And what has happened is that old people are pitted against young people, and we're here fighting. In the future, I would like to see us combine forces and try and set priorities for decent life and services in our state. And I have been told, I understand, that about half of the available revenue is set aside in various tax breaks which serve different purposes, and so on and so forth. If you're taking a zero-based approach to programs, I think you should also take a zero-based approach to revenue. I'm probably getting this a little screwed up, but I feel pretty
strong. No, you're not. Thank you. Your time is up. But no, you're not.
I think the witness is on her way down to hearing Renee.
If I may, Madam Chair.
And you may not, sir.
But.
Thank you very much. Go on.
I'm just going to say, where I was supposed to be was hearing Room A to testify on revenue reform, including a very comprehensive look at how we raise money and the tax expenditures, the tax breaks. Obviously, that wasn't possible because the House, as I'm sure you're aware, is locked in a very pitted battle on the Healthy Kids Plan and the cigarette tax to help raise revenue. So.
I'm just saying there is no hearing.
There is no hearing.
Is it canceled?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So email should be addressed to the Revenue Committee?
Yes.
And I will hope.
Barnhart.
Phil Barnhart. Thank you very much.
From Eugene.
Yeah.
From Eugene, yes.
Yes, so that means there'll be another opportunity, Madam Chair.
And you may start.
Okay, good afternoon. I'm Diane Birch, and I'm very happy to be here, Honorable Chair Carter, and members. I'm here representing the Senior and Disabled Services of Lane County. However, I do reside in Florence, Oregon, on the beautiful Oregon coast. I am here to talk to you about the Oregon Project Independence, the funding concerns that we're talking about today. Every day you hear from Oregonians needing and seeking your assistance with the additional funding of crucial programs. Year after year, you do everything within your power to answer to those who rely on your legislative budget planning. With the greatest respect to each of you in the difficult decision-making you are asked to do, please accept our thanks for all of your effort to listen and to consider the requests coming before you during this legislative session. As you are well aware, the urgency and continued funding for Oregon Project Independence, there is no general funding directed towards OPI in the Ways and Means co-chair's budget.
The demand for services, as you know, far exceeds what has been allocated, and the waiting list for the most vulnerable citizens who suffer from the lack of needed vital services continues to grow with our aging population. Serving as a senior disabled services advocate, I understand your dilemma in finding enough resources to go around. Please know that you do have our wholehearted support in helping you develop the best planning that Oregon can offer its citizens. With months and months of time that we've spent working to bring to you the best information, we extend our plea to restore the general fund commitment to Oregon Project Independence of $12 million, to support the governor's proposed increase to OPI for $4 million, which would raise the funding to $16 million. Protecting the funds for our senior and disabled citizens for this most important and cost-effective program for in-home care is so vital. And I was looking through many of my notes and emails and from OPRAD. Am I out of time?
You're out of time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And if everybody uses their time and gets to us a little more, we can thank everybody that has signed up.
Okay.
We really could.
Thank you
very much. Neil Twyford, Roscoe Blunt, Kathy Savani.
I hope I didn't murder your names too bad.
So you may start.
This is Neil Twyford. I've had cerebral palsy all my life, and I'm now elderly. I'm really dumbfounded to find myself here having to choose the very draconian thing of the elderly, the disabled, or the young students. This is horrid. And what I want to put out here to the people of the audience is maybe a coalition of the elderly, the disabled, and students should be formed so that we are never again put in this situation, so that we can actively work around the year-round. It's time that we stood up for ourselves and had some respect for ourselves. So I'm going to put that out. I don't want to lead anything like that because I'm not that good at it. But I'll tell you right now, it's got to be done. Because this is ridiculous what I see here. I feel sorry for you having to make these decisions when it comes to this. You know, all of this goes back to what's happened in Washington since 2001. And we've got to stop it. I don't know where the leaders are, where the groups are anymore. But I'm calling here now for the elderly, the disabled, and students to come together and work on this issue so we're not cut off at the ankles. That's what's happening here.
Thank you.
I'm very angry.
Thank you for coming and thank you for getting angry. With that.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Kathleen Sawney, and I strongly recommend and support that you come up with funds to keep the Oregon Project going so that seniors can stay in their homes as long as they are capable of maneuvering and capable of corresponding, and even if they need extra help within their homes. I had my mother who lived by herself until she was no longer able to live by herself because she could not take care of herself. And I found that when she was placed into a care facility, she did go down quickly. I had an aunt also who was living independently, and she got to a point where she could not take care of herself sufficient enough, but there was no way that someone could come into her home to be paid to come into her home to see that she ate properly, that her clothes were kept clean. She was then to live with me because the doctor said that was another choice. She lived with me as long as she could, and as long as she was in my home, I could see that she was capable of carrying on with herself. But once she was placed into a care facility, again, there was that downslide, because once you're put into a care facility, you lose everything. You lose your independence. You lose your thoughts. You're under control of where you go and what you do and what you have and what you don't have. So it's really important. I am a senior. I'm not to a point, though, where I know that in the future I will have to be in circumstances, and I would like to see that we can stay in our homes up to the very last. Thank you. Thank you.
Cindy Carter and committee. My name is Roscoe Blunt, and I'll be very blunt. I am not asking you to save anybody. I'm asking you to save yourself. Save yourself. Save your mama. Save your father. Because that's one statistic I am certain of, and that is everybody who is not getting old is dead. And you will be getting it. You will make it, I pray. We need additional funds. We need additional funds because veterans are coming home and you're on your way to the nursing home. I pray you won't make it. I pray that you can stay home, be with your family, be with your children, and the next time somebody has asked for money, let it be you out here. And I bet you can be a lot more explanatory.
Like
it. Well, he certainly pulled out budgets. Thank you very, very much.
Roscoe Blunt.
Okay. Maya and Tom Chamberlain. Megan Brendel. Brendel or Brendel.
Everyone was not getting older than dead.
And you can get started while they're coming.
Okay. Thank you, committee members, and specifically to Senator Gordley and her staff for ongoing support to seniors and people with disabilities. My name is Maya Chamberlain. I'm a program director for Friendly House in Multnomah County. We allocate OPI funding to members of our community. I'm here today to represent a couple of voices who wanted very much to be here, but because of the long trip and a lot of sitting, they weren't able to make it. So I'm reading a couple of letters that they asked me to read on their behalf. Dear committee members, today I received a call from Friendly House asking me to partake in their advocacy efforts in Salem on 426. It is with heavy heart that I had to decline their request due to my inability to sit for long periods of time. You see, I had a hip replacement several months ago. My recovery has been long. Due to unforeseen complications, I have required more assistance than I ever thought I'd be willing to accept. Thanks to Friendly House and funding from OPI, my recovery is at home. I'm a longtime social worker with an extensive background in senior emotional wellness. In addition to working in social service, I am an aging woman who struggles with depression. When I was told there had been complications as a result of my surgery and I was going to have to recuperate in a rehab facility, I was at the lowest point ever. I view myself as an independent person with all the supports I need. I refused rehab care and went home. It didn't take long to realize that I was in over my head, and I enlisted the support of Friendly House. A caseworker greeted me at my home with a food box she'd prepared, keeping in mind my need for easy meal prep. Within 2 days, she'd arranged for me to have someone come in and assist me with bathing and housekeeping tasks. I was not able to housekeeping tasks that I was not able to do. My caseworker has explained that the assistance I was receiving was from a fund called OPI, Oregon Project Independence. I liked the sound of it. I'm well into my recovery, and the good days are getting better. The bad days are getting fewer. I no longer need the extra supports from Oregon Project Independence. I do know at this time in my life, my body is winding down. It gives me tremendous comfort to know that OPI is there for me when I should need it. I ask you, with all that I have, to secure the funding so that I know when my time comes for me to ask for a little help, it'll be there. Thank you
very much.
Hello, my name is Megan Brodell, and I work for a senior program up in Portland. I'm here to support Oregon Project Independence. I think that the great thing about OPI is that it gives a sense of security to the seniors that I know. I see that it helps many of them feel confident that they can live safely in their homes. I work with one lovely woman who is quite frail. Certain tasks, such as taking out the garbage or bathing, are much too difficult for her. I believe that the few hours of housekeeping that OPI provides is a great relief for her. It seems to set her mind at ease, knowing that these important needs will be taken care of. Working with seniors has shown me that consistent housekeeping and bath help is one of the most effective ways to keep seniors healthy. OPI is so valuable, and I ask that you support this program as much as you can. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Jill Reagan, Helen Cleveland, Suzette Boydston.
Members of the subcommittee, thank you for inviting us to be here today. My name is Suzette Boydston. I'm director of the Senior Companion Program serving Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties in Oregon. And I'm also vice chair for our Senior Services Advisory Council that serves Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties. You don't want to hear from me, you want to hear from my two volunteers that I brought with me, who are seniors, serving seniors and disabled adults to keep them healthy in their own homes for as long as possible. I'm here to support funding, additional funding, steady funding for OPI, Oregon Project Independence, which helps reimburse my two volunteers so that they may help our folks stay at home longer so they can volunteer at no personal cost to themselves. If it weren't for OPI, Mike Volpe, who gave wonderful testimony earlier, would not be here today and would not have been an advocate. He's absolutely fabulous. I support any investigation and any additional taxes. Obviously, we can't do it. I appreciate your tip on the Constitution, because we are not serving our communities, and it hurts my feelings. It desperately hurts my feelings. So I'd like Helen Cleveland to say a few words, and then Bill Reagan.
I intended to say my name's Helen Cleveland, but she took care of that. One thing I have learned from being in the Senior Companion Program is every dollar you put to work in the Senior Companion Program uses it doubly, because in 1992, my husband passed away, and because of legal difficulties, I was left with only $107 from Social Security to support myself on. At the same year, I found out about the Senior Companion Program and signed up as a volunteer. So my needs were taken care of, but because I signed up, there were other people's needs taken care of. At the present time, I serve a blind lady. She is so independent in her home, but she hasn't taught her dog to read or drive yet, so she's dependent on me. And she really appreciates that there's so many things she can do for herself, but she can't take care of the things that I help her with. I also have a 87-year-old lady. She drives around home, but to get anything substantial, she has to go to the big city. She doesn't drive at 87 in the city, so she depends on me. I'm only 80. I also have a client that wrote books about travel. He walked all over this universe, every place. He had a severe stroke. He now can't hardly move around his own home. I sit with him so his wife can take care of the business. Otherwise, he needs, because the stroke took his ability to take care of his bathroom needs away from him, he needs help just doing that. And I have a 75-year-old lady that I had to change cars because she got too fat for my van. But for the use of my husband's car, she wouldn't get to town either. So it helped me when I needed it and continues to help me. Even though I've married again, it's still, that money is very vital in our ability to go on, and it helps our clients.
Thank you very much.
Madam Carter and board members,
I'm proud to be here, and I've been volunteering for 14 plus years helping seniors. Last year and a half, I've been doing Senior Companion, and I finally realized just how many seniors are out there that need our help. I help them get to their doctor, make their appointments, take them grocery shopping, and my main passion is to see that they're happy. I go to their house, I open the door, they smile, and glad and welcome them to their home. I take them for a walk, make sure that they can get out so that they can stay in their own home and do the things that they want to do. And they really need our help, and there's so many of them out there that's begging for help and can't get it. And I just pray every morning that I will have the strength to go on every day to be able to help them. And I pray that you will open your heart up and do the things that you feel that is right. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming, too. Thank you.
Bill Olson, Verna Porter, Ruth,
then is that G-U-G, Gumbrance, or Googles? Gomez.
Jim Davis. Jim Davis, Bill Olson, Verna Porter.
Sir, you can get started. Yes, sir.
Chair Carter, members of the committee, my name is Bill Olson. I'm the co-chair of the Advocacy Coalition of Seniors and People with Disabilities. For the record, I live in West Salem. I've given you written testimony, but just to hit the highlights of it, I'm here to speak to the need to restore funding for the General Assistance Program, which was eliminated by the 2005 Legislative Assembly. This is a safety net program that is absolutely critical for people with disabilities who are in the process of applying for assistance with SSA, that is SSI and SSBI assistance, and while they wait, if they are in a situation where they just don't have any resources, this is the only form of cash assistance that we can give them to meet their basic needs. I don't know if I need to talk about the backlog of when you go into a hearing process. And as you know, many people who apply for disability insurance wind up having to go through a hearing process to successfully pursue their claim. And so those people can be caught up for a couple of years in pursuing the process. Most people who have a disability can get service earlier than that, but even so, you're talking 2 to 3 months, and that would be in a very good case, I would think, from my experience. It took my son 5 years to be recognized for his disability, but that was back in 83. And so, in summary, very quickly, if a disability could befall any of us in an instant, and $11 million per biennium would allow us to restore this program and provide that essential safety net feature. So I recommend and ask for your support to the Ways and Means Committee for that program. Thank you very much for your opportunity to testify.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Jim Davis, representing Advocacy Coalition of Seniors and People with Disabilities, United Seniors, Oregon State Council for Retired Citizens, and Save Oregon Seniors. I'm here today to express our very strong support for our national model, the community-based long-term care system, and to highlight certain key areas that we're most concerned about. Of course, we support the model system as the boomers are heading into the senior years, but we're particularly concerned this session, and we introduced legislation around it, around the service priority levels, around those being more fair, around good appeals processes within that, and also we very much would like to see considerations of levels 4, 14 and 15. supporting Project Independence has already been well stated. We don't want to see money completely coming out of the general fund because of the difficulties we think we might experience in future sessions when funding through the property tax deferral program is not at the same levels. As a matter of fact, less than half of those levels. We want to make sure that access to general fund dollars still is available for this critical program. There are two areas that are of great concern to us that we want to make mention of. One of those is the retired and senior volunteer state projects, which have been an immense success, have involved thousands of volunteers, reached tens of thousands of individuals through tutoring and mentoring in the schools, through efforts at social service systems and crime prevention. That program was funded at $250,000 12 years ago and is now at $275,000. We would like to see it go up to $450,000, which would just be a normal increase for that, especially with the need to approach the boomer volunteers. Last, we want to talk about increased funding or actual funding for senior and disability mental health. It's an area where we're completely ignored. These populations are completely ignored. We support Senate Bill 847, which would fund projects to reach out to these populations. We'd want to add disability to that, by the way. And we also support the development of the state task force on the mental health and addiction needs of the underserved populations, seniors, people with disabilities, and ethnic minorities. So we ask that you provide strong support to the senior and disability services, and particularly take a look at the RSVP and the mental health and addiction projects as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, for the record, Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations for AARP Oregon, representing an organization with over 500,000 older Oregonians, many very active, but some, depending on many of the supportive services you've heard about this afternoon, I concur with everything that's been said by others this afternoon. I've been shuttling between a couple of different committees, but I've had the opportunity to hear some of the other comments. I've made the observation to many of you throughout the session that there's been a great deal of emphasis on children, both education and health care, and rightly so. But I've also indicated to you that this was a session that we also needed to try and reinvest in many of the programs we've talked about this afternoon. And with all due respect, when I look at the co-chair's budget, that just hasn't happened yet. I also appreciate the comments of Senator Gourley and others related to revenue and tax reform, but we've got to deal with what we have right now in revenue. So I would encourage you to continue working the co-chair's budget and to try and better address the needs that you've heard about this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Verna Porter?
Verna is unable to make it for health reasons.
Okay. Ruth Gilas?
I'm
your panel.
Let's go.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am Ruth Gilas, Executive Director of the Oregon Alliance of Senior and Health Services. We are the statewide association of not-for-profit, mission-directed long-term care providers representing affordable housing, nursing homes, assisted living residential care, and some home care providers. I'm here with two of my members, who David Parrott, who will speak to the Medicaid capacity issue that is starting to be a problem here in the state, and Dennis Russell, who will speak to the nursing facility staffing initiative. Before that, I just want to mention, as we are talking about in future planning for long-term care, oftentimes an element or an important component we forget about is the role of technology. And technology can and will go a long way in helping us transform the way that care is provided, that it will allow a lot of these people, a lot of the good people providing direct care in this room, as we say, high-tech, high-touch. And with that, I would just like to say that there's going to be, the Oregon Center for Aging and Technology is going to be having a demo day to demonstrate some of the exciting things that are going on in Oregon in that regard. And with that, I will turn it over to David.
Thank you, Norman. My name is David Parrott. I represent Dallas Retirement Village, a community of about 320 residents. We have 240 employees and about 250 volunteers. Since 1947, our purpose has been able to serve the people in our community, seniors in our community, who can afford to pay or who cannot afford to pay. Our goal really is to be able to provide service to anyone that comes to our door. Obviously, the concern we have today is that I think Oregon was very innovative in creating a community-based funding system that allowed for assisted living and residential care to assist people. The concern is that because funding has fallen behind, the acuity has increased over the years. There has been additional cost of living, but the funding and the assistance to help fund that has lagged behind. It's gotten to the point now that many of my fellow communities have chosen or have decided that they can no longer support the Medicaid residents coming in. I think that this is going to be a concern, obviously, for access as more and more communities try to make it work with their budget and find that they cannot provide access to Medicaid residents. Another one of our communities in Oregon, the concepts of a community and living have recently had to reduce almost 50% of the Medicaid population that they can serve because of the falling behind and the lack of service. So we support what Oregon has done. We appreciate their support on that. We feel that adequately funding the community access is critical to the success to make sure that not only in the future we don't just have assisted living and residential care for the private pay, but for everyone that deserves it.
Thank you so much. And you're exactly right.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dennis Russell. And as Ruth said, I was really brought along to talk about the staffing ratios in nursing facilities. You all have the numbers in front of you. You know the governor's budget had $3 million. The budget that you've put forward is cut that in half to $1.5 million. I think I would rather just say in the 21 years that I've been doing this in the state of Oregon and serving seniors and been intimately involved on seven different work groups, task force, commissions, committees in the state of Oregon, whether it was RCF funding in the very beginning when we started to create the model, to most recently Medicare Part D integration for dual eligibles, and I'm also on the Continuing Care Advisory Council. I'm probably for the first time not an optimistic provider in the state of Oregon, and that's hard to get me in that place. I'm very optimistic and very supportive of our model. As I work with colleagues across the country, Oregon has an incredible reputation of being nimble and of being supportive and keeping people as independent as possible. And I think the biggest challenge that I see us facing as our population ages from our membership standpoint is the moral dilemma that we as not-for-profit, primarily faith-based providers have been placed in when we see the increasing disparity between the actual cost of care and the reimbursement mechanisms that support our seniors in the most independent settings possible. And we can't walk away from our missions. Most of us have been doing this for 45 and 50 years and 60 years as faith-based organizations. We can't walk away from our missions. And it's forcing us to make those hard choices to hide or shift or tax other individuals and placing them in jeopardy financially. And so I would come today to not only recommend that we fully fund the staffing to the levels recommended in the governor's budget, but for us to commit together to work on the size of the pie. You guys have a limited size pie. You give us a bigger piece, it's at the expense of someone else, and we're forced in that position of cannibalizing someone else. We will work together to help increase the size of the pie, but we also need to advocate for the seniors that we are that we've chosen to serve. Thank you
very much. Madam Chair, I'm just so pleased to hear you say that you're willing to work toward increasing the size of the pie. That is work that can go forward as we're also dealing with the realities of the co-chair's budget and trying to get those inequities worked out, and we will do that.
Mr. Mullen, you can come and sit and talk in, because I really want, we can get the next panel and then everybody that's been in.
And this is just a point of personal privilege, and I'll try to be as brief as I can. Observation that we all share, those of us who sit here. This is what happens every legislative session. The folks who support pre-kindergarten come on their day. The folks who support K-12 come on their day. Then we have community colleges. Then we have higher ed. Then we have seniors. Then we have... We need
a day that is about raising Oregon to Greatness Day, and when we focus in that way, which is about the pie and getting more into the pie, and it's about revenue reform, we'll move ourselves forward as a state. So help us create that kind of day and that kind of lobbying effort. That's what's required. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. The Oregon Law Center has a long history of working on senior and disability issues, but I want to also comment on the fact that I work 31 years in this system, and I don't need to tell any members of this committee about what the Oregon model is all about. You've been around and you've supported it from the beginning in some instances. I do want to mention the fact that because of the cuts that have happened over the last number of years that you're also very much aware of, the system's become not only leaner but meaner. And by that I mean that a lot of people that have significant needs are no longer able to get into the system. So I've given a couple of examples of that in my testimony, and I want to use the balance of my remarks to talk about a couple of things very quickly. One is the General Assistance Program, which was one of the casualties of the budget cutting that had to happen here a couple of years back. And hopefully your committee will soon be hearing House Bill 3139 that passed out of the Human Services Women's Wellness Committee with a very strong recommendation, do pass recommendation. I know that will be a challenge to find the resources for that, but the general assistance population has often been called the poorest of the poor. The other thing that I want to mention is workload in general, and you've heard a lot of comments about workload in this system. I've given a couple of examples in my testimony, but I can't talk about workload without mentioning equity, and you've heard a lot about that today. I would just say on a personal basis, I retired earlier than I had expected to because of the reductions that happened down here and the equity gap that existed in Clackamas County. So I hope for the benefit of my erstwhile colleagues that you'll take up that issue. And then finally, I just would remark very quickly on the issue of revenue, as that as Senator Gordley knows, because she came to the recent meeting of the Human Services Coalition, we've taken up that discussion. You have letters from us about the gaps and revenue needs, and we did submit testimony on House Bill 2530, which we'll have to, I guess, repackage and send in again. But thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
Our final panel, Patrick Singh from Representative Cowan's office, John Schneider, Dennis Bartolos. Okay.
Especially from those of you who come from the coast, that Representative Boone and the rest of the House members are on the floor doing good work, and Representative Cowan's person will speak for her, but they are on a call, cannot get off the floor, and are discussing the cigarette tax in order to pay for other services. So I want to make sure that coastal residents understand that their legislator wanted to be here but just could not be here.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, again, Patrick Singh, Legislative Assistant to State Representative Jean Cowan, who represents House District 10 on the Central Oregon Coast, and again, apologize that she could not be here in person as she is bound by a call of the House, but I do have a statement that she has prepared that she was planning on giving to you this afternoon, and I will go ahead and read that. Sadly, as you know, as many of you know, I find my district the poster child in the impending crisis in senior care in Oregon. If I must play the canary in the coal mine role, so be it. In doing so, I urge you to give serious consideration to the testimony you are hearing about the rates the state pays to community-based senior residential facilities, what I refer to as the mid-range residential facilities. What happened in the last 3 months was a decision from the corporate owners of Spencer House, an assisted living facility in Newport, to give a 60-day notice that would no longer accept Medicaid clients. In just 2 months, SPD was forced to relocate 15 individuals away from their home and their friends. This would be a terrible experience for any of us. For the elderly, it is particularly traumatic. With me today are folks who were intimately involved in the process. The only word I have to describe this sudden and unexpected corporate decision is unconscionable. Let me now give you a look at the future. As of today, SPD tells me that 29 facilities under the ownership of three corporations have requested gradual withdrawal of Medicaid contracts. A gradual withdrawal contract means that anyone who moves into the facility after the effective date of the contract will not be able to remain if he or she depletes their assets and becomes Medicaid eligible. However, residents who are in the facility prior to this contract are allowed to remain if they spend down and become eligible for Medicaid services. Residents who are currently on Medicaid at the time the new contract becomes effective are allowed to remain in the facility. That was a memo that we received from Mary Gear at DHS. We don't know how many more facilities may experience similar changes in the future, but I adamantly believe it is a trend we must work to change. The situation as I see it is this. Number one, Oregon has an exemplary in-home care system that assists aging citizens maintain their home residence as long as possible. Stable support for Oregon Project Independence is critical to this piece of the care system. And number two, the provider tax has allowed us to increase rates paid to extended care facilities, nursing homes, for Medicaid clients. But the weakness is our system of care that is in that mid-range residential I described, adult foster care and assisted living facilities. Our rates are not even close to keeping pace with the private market, jeopardizing placement availability for Medicaid-eligible seniors when they can no longer stay in their homes. It's a systemic weakness we must simply find a way to address. With the growth of our aging population, a well-balanced long-term care system is critically important. If we fail our community-based residential centers, seniors requiring limited care will be forced into nursing homes, a far more costly option than the mid-range residential options. We cannot allow the hydraulics to push us to the wrong balance. I urge you to find a way to improve the rate payment structure for our community-based residential facilities. I recognize the difficulty of the task before you, but this issue simply must be addressed. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you. Thank you. My name is Joan Schroeder, and I'm a case manager from Senior and Disabled Services in Lincoln County. I've worked for that agency for over 20 years in all levels of case management. On February 8, 2007, in an unprecedented move, Assisted Living Concepts, which was a corporation that owned Spencer House that we were just discussing, met individually with all the Medicaid residents and told them they had 60 days to move out. These residents had done nothing wrong. Their care needs were not exceptional. As a matter of fact, the corporation said it wasn't even a personal matter. It was just because they were on Medicaid. Assisted Living Concepts is a national corporation with a number of subsidiaries. The corporate head who flew from Wisconsin to tell these frail elder Medicaid recipients on February 8th that they, the corporation, were losing money having them in their building, so they all had to leave their homes without exception and without a right to hearing, which in itself is exceptional for Medicaid. Dear distinguished committee members, are these the kind of people who want caring for our elderly in Oregon? Do we really want to pay for these people with more money? I can tell you none of these people ended up in a better place. One died after the move. Some suffered extreme cognitive decline once moved against their will and their homes from their homes. Assisted living concepts caused harm to these elderly and disabled individuals.
30 seconds. If I can ask for anything today, it would be that additional money for the care of the elderly be directed towards in-home care. To keep individuals in their homes with increased services coming into them through in-home providers that are on staff with local agencies, including nursing, and that we as local providers oversee the care of the elderly and disabled on a grassroots level. I believe as long as we keep elders out of any institutional living, we can keep them generally safer while assisting them to maintain their own autonomy in their own homes and with their constitutional rights intact. Please do not throw money at corporations and make them accountable for their actions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I want to take this opportunity to thank all of you for being here today. And again, the other legislators from the House give them their apologies and for not being able to be here. Thank you very much.